Well, good morning. Greetings in Jesus' name. Seems like the flu has taken its round several times and kept a lot of people from church. So God bless you if you're at home listening in and are sick. We had a round of it at home, and it's been a trial, that's for sure. Okay, let's just kneel together for prayer this morning. Father, we thank you for this morning. Thank you for giving us this day. Just thank you for the many that are here, and we just pray for those that are home sick. Lord, would you heal them and bless them? We just realize how weak we are as human beings and how much we need you. Just pray that you would just bless our service this morning. Would you speak to us? Just pray for your wisdom and direction as I share. Pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. All right, well, this morning there's been a sermon that I wanted to preach and talk about for probably over 2 years already, and there never seemed to be an appropriate time. I'll give you the title and then maybe you'll understand. I called it Deliberations About I Do's, or in simpler terms, Thinking About Weddings. And so different times that I considered addressing the subject, somebody was either they just got married or they were getting ready to get married, and it seemed like it would feel like a personal attack or something like that, and I didn't want it to be that at all. And so I felt like maybe this morning would be a good time. I do have a couple of disclaimers, if you will. I am not at all trying to dig up bones and burn them. That's like they did in the Old Testament with some of the bad prophets. And if your wedding was different than what I'm talking about, or what's set forth as ideals here, you don't need to panic or get upset or turn me off thinking that you're in focus here. That's not the reason at all. This is a forward-looking sermon. The only looking back that we'll do is just simply to look at some pictures to see where we don't want to go. So I just appeal to you this morning not to shut your ears or your heart. And another thing is I tried to choose pictures that I don't think anyone here would recognize, or there's this emotion that goes with attachment, and I tried to disconnect that as much as I could, where the pictures that we look at are hopefully somebody that you don't know. And if that isn't the case, I'm sorry. I tried to choose something that wouldn't leave someone with personal attachment to you, and therefore making them feel like they can't hear what's being said. But in starting out, I would like to start with courtships, simply because courtships come before weddings, and those are very, very important as well. And even before courtship, it's very important before courtship. The whole boy-girl teasing thing at home, it's wrong. It's not godly, it's not biblical, and it shouldn't happen. It should be forbidden in our homes to have boy-girl teasing going on. Or the same way at church, boy-girl talk at church, friends talking to friends, or teasing going on. That is wrong, and it should not be named among us. It stirs up emotions, and it stirs up wrong ideas about marriage and about married life. And so it's just the thing for you to do as a young person is to keep your heart. Reserve it. Romance novels are an enemy to keeping your heart. So if there's any kind of that liberty in your home, if your parents, please get rid of those things, because they, even the what they call soft, are terrible in messing with hearts. And if you let your heart go out to someone, then you're going to hurt yourself. It's going to damage your own spiritual relationship with God, emotional relationship. It's going to be very damaging to yourself. And if you communicate that attention to another person through eye contact or flirting, other forms of communication, whatever it is, then you hurt that person too. Those kinds of things are very damaging. They're not wholesome, they're not healthy, and they shouldn't be among us. Another thing is that it's impossible for you to have a single eye for the Lord when you're feeding secret admirations and living in a fantasy world, filling your mind with thoughts of someone that you think is maybe cute or handsome. Keep your heart. And when you're old enough and you go through the proper authorities, then things can progress as they should in a godly way. But to feed those things as a young person is very devastating. It's very bad. It's very unhealthy for you. And it'll also, depending what all it turns into, you'll also have many regrets later on for what you did. Okay, as far as courtship is a time to get to know each other and to seriously consider marriage. That's the reason for courtship. It's not a time to feed the flesh and emotions. That's not what it's for. It's a time to get to know each other. Emotions, no doubt, are going to be awakened. And with the thought of marriage and spending life together, there's emotions that go with that. That isn't all wrong. It's not bad. It's quite natural. But with it comes the responsibility to be pure in all things. There's a responsibility to be pure. Purity in your life, whether courting or not, needs to be guarded very carefully. I have to think of a story I heard of John Overholt. He's the one that compiled our Christian hymn there. He put it together. And I forget, he was going on a trip somewhere. I think it was overseas. And if I remember right, he prayed with his father before he got on that ship. And he said, "God, bring me back pure or dead." That was his cry. He knew there would be temptations along the way. He knew that there were people that are not going to be pure on that ship. And he knew that he was going to face temptations. And so his cry was, before he left, "Either bring me back pure or dead." That should be the zeal that we have in protecting purity. Once purity is gone, the innocence that was there before can never be recovered. It's not something where you can just hit a reset button. Moral purity should be protected with jealousy by all young men and young women. It's something to be very serious about, something to be desperate about in your life. Your goal should be to present a pure, undefiled heart and body to your wife or husband, whoever you marry. There shouldn't be this whole list of prior crushes and past flirting and silly interaction with the opposite gender. But totally pure. Everything saved for the person that you marry. I think that's a beautiful picture. And courtships don't always work out. And so that's why we have this time of courtship, to learn to get to know each other. And sometimes there's a need for terminating it. But what a blessing when it can be terminated with no regrets about what we did, how we related to each other. Purity in all things. Another thing, I don't appreciate this mindset that someone who is courting is going to be kind of out of it. You know, they're just not, their mental capacity is handicapped or something because they're courting. We're not animals, and neither should we tolerate driven behavior. Even when we're courting, we possess all the faculties to govern our thoughts, behavior, speech, and even phone usage. All of that we should be able to control. God has given us the ability to do that, and we should. It's not okay for us to go into some stage of drivenness. We're to control ourselves at all times, and that's when we're courting as well. And I'm not saying that anybody here hasn't. I'm just, there's these mentalities and ideas out there, and I'm just trying to help us think properly about some of these things. Okay, weddings. Let's talk about weddings. Why do weddings cause such a fuss? Why is the ministry so concerned about what happens in weddings? And, you know, the question is, isn't that the bride's day? Isn't that the day that the bride is able to organize the whole day, and it's her special day? And why are the ministers always trying to ruin this special day? And maybe you're not aware of that, but some people are. They feel that way. Doesn't the ministry realize that this is a once-in-a-lifetime event? Why is it that they don't want us to make it special? I think these are some of the questions that tend to come up. Why don't they want us to have this special day? Well, the question that I would like to investigate this morning is, what is special? What makes it special? How do we know whether it's special or not? I think those are questions that we should ask and answer this morning. Well, I would like to say, I think all of us agree that weddings are special. All of us agree that weddings are special. They're very special. But who decides what all defines what makes the day special? Who should decide that? Or how do we come to those conclusions? I would like to describe this morning, first of all, some of the specialness of the wedding day. There are some very amazingly special things about a wedding day, and I would like to exalt those here for us this morning and look at them. They're very exciting. Number one, it was God's idea, and it was a really good one. It was God's idea. In Genesis 2, we can see that beautiful picture of how Adam, he didn't find anybody to be with him, in the sense that the animals all appeared to have partners, but he didn't. And so God created one for him. And he brought Eve and gave her to Adam. the first marriage, the very first one. So it was God's idea. God brought them together, and God still does that today. And that's a tremendously wonderful thing that God has done. Number two, it's a day that is a beginning of a new home. Two lives become one. And together, they go off and start what will be from now on uniquely theirs. They together will go and start a new home. The days of going back home to mom and dad after the date is over, those days are gone. They're together now, and they go home to their house, and they start their own home, and it's theirs. That is special. That is exciting. That is wonderful. The wedding is not a destination. Get this. The wedding is not a destination. It is a beginning. Let's not decide or think that somehow we've finally arrived when we come to the wedding day. No, that is the beginning of something new. It's not a destination, it's a beginning. Their dreams, their visions, their joys and sorrows will now be lived together. And that's wonderful, it's exciting, it's a blessing that God has made it to work out that way, that these two people can share together, even in disappointment and sorrow. There's something very unique and special about this couple that God has joined together. They now are one, and they share these things together. Another wonderful thing is the option of another coming along and asking for a special relationship with the one that you have come to love. That door is totally closed. She or he is yours. Nobody else's. Completely yours. That is special. When the minister lays his hand on your clasped hands and pronounces you man and wife, something in the records up in heaven change. That is special. That is exciting. In heaven, something changes. Not only here on earth, but also in heaven. Moments before, a physical relationship was sin, but now you owe it to each other. Lips that never kissed a lover can now freely do so. These are things that are special, very special. Two pure young souls are joined together in one. They had guarded their purity ever so carefully, and now they have the gift of pure innocence to give to their spouse. That is special. That is exciting. That is wonderful. And by the way, that is something that very few people give their spouse nowadays. No guilty feelings of regret. No moral baggage to bring into the union. Only purity. God's blessing rests on this couple as they start their journey in life together. That is exciting. God sanctions it. God blesses it. And God goes together with the couple as they go. To me, that sounds like a very special day. The day that God in heaven opens His books and writes, "This day, I, Jehovah, declare so-and-so and so-and-so man and wife." And the book's closed. There it is forever. That is special. So the question, why is there a need for some of the additives that are deemed necessary in weddings? Now, if I think about it, I can understand that the world would need these things to bolster up their weddings. That makes sense. I can understand that. The things we talked about that make a wedding special have all been exploited already. The couple can't give the gift of purity. They're defiled. Their relationship has been sensual. They didn't love enough to stay pure. So, there's something else that's going to have to make this day special, right? They may have a history of many other lovers. When the wedding day comes, they can't join their hands for the first time. That's happened a long time ago. The sacred moments that should be theirs on this day are marred with the scars of sin. So to me it seems that it follows quite naturally that it would take lots of money and other supposedly exciting things to make up for that which should have really made their day special. So in that sense, you would expect to see lots of pomp and show and that kind of thing at weddings. But is it right for us to see that and get excited about artificial special and then bring that into the church? These are just questions that I'm asking to get us thinking. Should we get excited and import artificial special into the church? When we were over in Argentina, we sat in on an instruction class, and this is a quite conservative church. I found it interesting, one of the things that the ministers said there as they were talking, it happened to be on weddings that evening, one of the things they talked about was weddings in their instruction class. And he made this statement. He said, "Weddings put every church to the test." Why? We just looked at how wonderful, exciting, and special a wedding is. Why would a minister say that weddings seem to put every church to the test? Why would he say such a thing? Why should such a blessed ceremony need to leave church leaders wringing their hands in despair? And I've listened to many different ones. And in sharing this here this morning, I hope you understand. We have had very blessed experiences here. And I'm very thankful for you. God bless you. I'm not trying to dig up bones and burn them. And there's many things that are tremendous blessing. But I do want us to consider where we're going. I don't know if you've ever had the experience of pulling a wagon by the tongue. Maybe there's some people back there pushing, and you happen to go over the hump, and this thing starts going downhill, and you're up in the front with the tongue, and that thing is pushing, and there's no way you can stop. The best thing you can do is run for all you've got. Try to not get run over and steer that thing to get it safely to the bottom of the hill. And I'm afraid many church leaders feel that way about weddings. The thing is running away. There's really nothing that they can do about it. There's this philosophy that it's the bride's day and the ministry and the church has no right to speak into it. And so all they can do is try to keep ahead of it and kind of try to steer the thing from turning over. Shouldn't such a sacred and special day fill the heart of the ministry with joy? I think it should. It should be a day of excitement, not heaviness. Well, this morning I would like to look at several points that will help us as a church to be a blessing in weddings. And I've got some pictures of where we don't want to go that I plan to show. And I would like to show some good examples, but the only pictures I have of good examples are some from weddings of this church. And I'd rather not put a stumbling block of pride in front of someone. But you can take it as a great compliment, okay? Now, I'm not saying that there aren't other many good examples that could be used. I just don't have any pictures of them. But I do have some very good pictures. But I'm not going to show those. But I would like to give you a glimpse into why some ministers in some places despair of weddings. And I want to show you where weddings tend to gravitate to, where they tend to go if not controlled. Let's see if I can get this thing started up here. Okay, number one, I don't know, is that thing going to start, Andrew? I opened the gate, but it's not. There we go. There we go, all right. Number one, what I'd like to look at is modesty. Is modesty for all areas of life except weddings? I don't think so. Let's look at 1 Peter chapter 3. First Peter 3 verses 3-5. Whose adorning, let it not be the outward adorning of plaiting of hair and the wearing of gold and the putting on of apparel, but let it be the hidden man of the heart, in that which is not corruptible, even the ornament of a meek and quiet spirit, which is in the sight of God of great price. For after this manner, in the old time, the holy women also, who trusted in God, adorned themselves, being in subjection unto their own husband. All right, let's also go to 1 Timothy 2. First Timothy 2, verses 9 and 10. In like manner also, the women adorn themselves in modest apparel, with shamefacedness and sobriety, not with broided hair, or gold, or pearls, or costly array. But that which becometh women professing godliness with good works. So there's a couple things here that we notice. In Peter it said a meek and quiet spirit. Here in Timothy Paul says shamefacedness, sobriety, and costly array. I would like to look at those. The dictionary says, for shamefacedness, it says, a sense of shame or honor, modesty, bashfulness around men, regard for others, respect. That's shamefacedness. And as we look at some of these pictures, I want you to keep this in the backdrop of your mind. Just remember these words that Paul and Peter have given us here. Sobriety, soundness of mind, self-control, and sober. That doesn't sound like being foolish or giddy, does it? Sobriety. Costly array. That's another word we want to look at. Costly array. Expensive or extravagant clothing. All right, I just wanted to say this. As we go through here, please don't do this to your heart and just turn us off. Don't put your heart in a castle behind the moat and just open your heart, listen, hear me out, and talk with me later if you want to discuss some more. So we're looking at what kind of statement should we be making? Modesty, sobriety, basic godly dress, meek and quiet spirit. Do these things seem to portray that? All right, let's also look at 2 Corinthians chapter 1 and verse 12. For our rejoicing is this, the testimony of our conscience. Paul is saying this is the testimony of his conscience, that in simplicity and godly sincerity, not with fleshly wisdom, but by the grace of God, we have had our conversation in the world and more abundantly to you ward. Paul is saying the testimony of his conscience was simplicity and godly sincerity, not fleshly wisdom, but the grace of God dwelling within them. And as we look at some of these things, I just have to wonder, is there simplicity and godly sincerity, or is there maybe some fleshly wisdom that is coming out here? Is there maybe something else that is driving some of what we see? Simplicity is simply meeting the basic needs, not being extravagant. I don't think Paul was extravagant. He did. He had what was necessary. That was it. He didn't waste a lot of time in front of the mirror. I'm convinced of that. Our testimony in weddings should be simplicity and godly sincerity, not with fleshly wisdom. I think I see that it's sadly lacking in simplicity and godly sincerity. Some of these things are. Why would a wedding dress need to be any different than any other modest dress that you wear? For some strange reason, special gets equated to immodesty and extravagance. And I don't understand why, other than maybe we've borrowed from those which don't have special anymore. And some of these things are the things that happen. And as we look through here, I just want you to notice this. Vests and capes disappear. Sheer fabric shows up. Necklines hit an all-time low. Ruffles and lace are used. Fabric that should never be chosen is used. Dresses are made tight and form-fitting. Lots of immodesty there. Why, I would like to know, if you have saved your purity and your body for your husband, would you show it off on your wedding day? That just doesn't make any sense at all to me. If you've saved your purity and your body, and you've been modest, and then on your wedding day, you show things off. That just doesn't make any sense at all. And should a prayer veiling be sheer or smaller just because it's your wedding day? I don't think so. All right, let's go on. Do shoes matter? I think shoes matter. There is a drive for all kinds of fancy, fashionable shoes. And is it necessary to have some kind of white slippers or sandals to be married in? I just can't imagine why that would be necessary. Obviously, these people think their shoes are important enough to show them off and post them online. They think they're important. And I think we should think they're important. Important enough to make some choices and decisions about them. You know, the thing about it is, direction is not neutral. It takes us somewhere. And the question is, where are we going, and where will we be when we get there? That's something that's a good question for us to ponder in the matter of weddings. Where are we going, and where will we be when we get there? Okay, another thing. Cakes. Do cakes really have, and cake cutting and feeding each other, does that really have a good part in the Christian wedding? I just question that. I really struggle with that as being something that originates from a godly source. Fancy decorated up cakes that, it just, something about it just doesn't fit that picture of simplicity and godly sincerity. Something about it just doesn't go with it. Anyway, we'll go on to flowers. What about flowers? So if you've been here around wedding time, you know that that tends to be kind of a big subject. What's wrong with flowers? So why is there such a big fuss about flowers? Well, I love flowers. I like flowers. I think God created them. I think they're beautiful. But I think there's appropriate times and places for them. And for some reason, weddings don't seem to be a very good place for them. They seem to be a very big thing in the world's weddings, and somehow they want to become big things in our weddings. And I think we should just try to remain a little more basic with what we do. And, you know, if we're really honest about it, the dresses, the flowers, the shoes, the whole gamut really kind of goes hand in hand. They all feed each other. So what about shaving cream and streamers and balloons and etc.? All those kinds of things. I would like to say they have no part with godliness. It is foolish, silly, and should not be found among professing Christians. Those things should not be named among us. And I don't think we've had it here, praise God, but I'm just telling you, here is some of the places we do not want to go. All right, our next step is bridal parties, processionals, recessionals, rehearsals, and those kinds of things. I would just like to ask us some questions. Do we really need these things and all the stuff that goes with them? What is the purpose of all the drama? That's what I would like to know. What's the purpose of it? You know, everybody has to stand just right, and the film is rolling, and the pictures are being taken, and do we really need it? Is it really a part of a special godly wedding? know, there's all the parading around that seems to have to happen. All the different things that take place with our bridal parties. Here they evidently found it necessary to roll the carpet out for them to walk on as they leave. In my opinion, if a rehearsal is needed, I think our wedding has become too complicated. We need to just make it a little more simple. If we need to spend several hours, you know, figuring out how to do the steps all right and how to walk this person in at the right speed and walk that person in at the right speed and do all these things, rituals and ceremony, could we just be free from that and just simply have a beautiful, pure wedding? It's too complicated. It's too ritualistic. We don't really like rituals in church for some reason, but in weddings it's okay for some reason. I'm just trying to throw out some new ideas, and please don't panic. But, you know, do we really need this? Do we need to go there? Would it really ruin the marriage? I'm not talking about the wedding day, but the marriage, if someone made a misstep on the wedding day. What if they sat down at the wrong time, or stood up at the wrong time, or stepped sideways at the wrong time? Is that going to ruin the marriage? Surely not. You know, there's all these lengthy things that have to be gone through, and I just wonder why. Is it really necessary? Is it really useful? Is it really edifying? Is it helping us in our Christian life some way? You answer those questions. Okay. Another subject that I'm going to address, I don't really have any pictures for that, but it's the matter of music. It seems to be another one of those runaway trains in a wedding. Music is just very hard for ministries to control. Very hard to try to guide and direct that thing. From the songs, the lyrics that are chosen, to the style, to the performances. I guess I have to ask the question, what is wrong with the congregation lifting their voice together in praise to God? What's wrong with that? Are special singing groups really a good idea? Again, don't panic, please, but ask yourself the question, are they really a good idea? Is that really what we need or want? There's a church in Manitoba that, in Canada, they came to the decision as a church, the only songs that are allowed come out of the hymnal in the back of the church pew. Those are the only songs that they're allowed to choose from for their weddings. And my guess is the reason they came there is because they couldn't control the thing. Because there's plenty of other songs that are beautiful songs, good songs, wholesome songs, and they're not in that book. But the pressure and the strain, and you really have no idea, unless you've been in the ministry, you have no idea the pressure that a minister is faced with walking into an already set up facility. And he's supposed to evaluate this thing. And sometimes his heart might be full of joy and just praise God. And other times there's this sinking feeling. And, you know, when you address something, then there's this, well, but we already did it. You know, we've been planning for months, or, you know, and there's this uneasiness and the strain that's there. My desire is that we could somehow eliminate that. How could we get rid of that? I don't know that I have all the answers. I don't know that I'm saying everything right this morning. But could we somehow make things clear enough where there doesn't have to be this strain this uncomfortable feeling throughout weddings and this ministers wringing their hands and wondering, what are we going to do with this? How are we going to tell them that half their songs aren't even fit to be sung? You know, what do you do with that? And so it's just, I'm not sure about all the answers, but let's think together on this matter. There's a story, and I don't know why we had these books in our school, I'm not sure, but we had these books that we read from through certain grades, and they had this story in there, a myth of this enchanted island or whatever it was, where these singers were on this island, and as boats, ships would go by there, if they listened to that music, they would dock their ship and listen to that music until they died. They would rather listen to that than eat and take care of themselves. And so anyway, the shores there were scattered with the bones of men. And, you know, that sounds like a kind of a silly, bizarre story, but I've wondered if somehow maybe whoever wrote that story might have noticed something that other people haven't caught on to. That there is some kind of power, there's some kind of draw to this certain kinds of music. And I believe that there are the spiritual bones of many people laying around some of the modern artists today. Can you take that? There are spiritual bones of our young people laying around some of the modern artists of our day. And those aren't all. Some of them might be plain clothes, too. So music is just one of those things. It wouldn't be right to not mention it, although I don't know what all to say about it. Okay, let's go on and look at some more decorations. So what's wrong with decorations? What's the problem with having some decorations? And again, if you've been around here at wedding times, you know that the ministry here has a big problem with decorations. And why is that? Why? Why is there such... Well, one, it's wasteful. Number two, there is no convenient stopping place. There's nowhere that it's a good place to stop and put the thing in park. Each couple somehow seems to feel obligated to out-decorate the last one. Just the way it works. There's no good place to stop. And if you look at this, just the money that's wasted on stuff like this. Unreal. Do we really... Is that a godly Christian testimony? Would Paul be comfortable here? I'd like to know. I mean, if you look at that, the detail. Look at the sugar on the top of the glass there. Somebody had to dip those glasses in something, water or whatever it was, and then dip them into sugar and then put their stuff into it and sprinkle the beads around, put the mirror down, the flowers. The list just goes on and on and on and on and on. How complicated can a simple godly wedding become? Do we really need that? They had a fine roof over top of that thing. Look at that. Even had lights in it, a ceiling, everything. But they had to put a pavilion in there. Why? Is it necessary? Is it godly? Is it wholesome? Do we really need it? I'm just trying to stir our thoughts this morning. Are you with me? What about food? Food, oh my. What's wrong with a basic, wholesome meal to feed our guests? Does it need to be something like this? Is that really necessary? I want you to notice. There are head coverings there, right? This isn't Las Vegas or somewhere. Why such spending? such lavish spending on food and decorations. The money that's wasted on decorations and food could hardly be considered close to the heart of God, could it? If there's extra money that needs to be put to use somewhere, wouldn't there be a more worthy cause somewhere else than this? I would surely think so. Is it unreasonable to consider just simply a basic, wholesome meal for our guests? I don't think so, but maybe it is. I don't know. So let's just consider that. What spirit are we feeding? Where are we going? And where are we going to be when we get there? I want to introduce you to a monster that has driven an amazing amount of foolishness. This thing has done untold amounts of damage to our weddings. And I'm not saying here, I'm talking in a broad sense. This thing right here, the camera, causes people to defy many godly principles. I'm not saying it just by itself, but it sure drives the thing. It promotes it big time. Here's some of them. Shamefacedness, we talked about that. Sobriety, meek and quiet spirit. It breaks down reserve. It promotes pride. It promotes fashion. And it drives foolishness. This thing here makes people do things that Andrew was talking about. They should be ashamed. Amen. And so maybe you ask, oh, so you're saying we should get rid of our cameras? Well, if I remember right, Jesus said, if your eye offends you, what are you supposed to do with it? Pluck it out and cast it from you. I have cameras, and I use cameras, but I would rather get rid of my camera than to endorse some of what goes on. Several thousand pictures are now considered normal for a wedding day. I can see that it would be a blessing. We didn't have cameras, so I don't have any pictures of my wedding day. And I think it would be kind of nice to have a few pictures, maybe a few. That would be a blessing. I think it would be nice. But 100? 100 photos of my wedding? I don't think I want to look at myself that much. Or what about 500 photos of your wedding? Or maybe 1,000? Or 2,000? Or I've heard people talk about 10,000 pictures of a single wedding day. God help us. 10,000. What would you do with them? Whatever for? What are they for? And that's plus several films that have been rolling the whole day. Well, let me show you what the camera does for us. That stuff right there shouldn't be in public at all. You know, why would they line up like that if they wouldn't have a camera? They wouldn't do it, right? What is this? Why would someone... Didn't we just look at... What was that list that we looked at? Propriety? Shamefacedness? Sobriety? Meek and quiet spirit? Breaks down reserve? Pride? Promotes fashion? Drives foolishness? Do you see any of that coming on? I just wonder why. Why these things? The people of God? Why? And I felt like it was kind of embarrassing enough where I just blacked out some of the picture there, because it's just, please. But you see what the camera does for us? They would not do that without the camera. Disgusting. And I'm sorry, I don't want to get too vehement here, but is this really where we want to go? Is this what we want to feed? Is this where we're headed? What part of this fits the picture of godliness, sobriety, serious-mindedness before God, holiness, purity? Okay. You know, from a very little age, there's ideas that are being growing in the minds and the hearts of our very little people. Look at that little girl. She has some ideas, doesn't she? She thinks flowers, a see-through veil, and lots of lace is necessary for a wonderful wedding day. She has no idea what is really exciting and special about a wedding day. But as she grows up, this image is going to stick in her mind. And she's going to feed that thing, and it's going to grow. And by the time she gets ready to marry, she's going to have this huge host of ideals about what she wants her wedding to be like. All right, well, that was all on the pictures. And I'm sorry if I offended you with any pictures. I am just trying to help us see. Let's think about this. Okay, after the wedding, or on the wedding day, after the ceremony, maybe I should say that. And we looked at some of those pictures. Propriety, reserve. Okay, yes, amen. God has joined you together, but the cuddling and the hugging and the petting and the kissing, sure, you're allowed now to do that. And I'm totally persuaded that you will. I'm completely convinced that you'll get that all taken care of. But please, not in front of us. We don't need to see that. And remember, there are others that maybe have a longing to be married, but they don't have that privilege. Is it right? Is it okay to show off what all you are now allowed to do in public? I think not. Let's give some serious thought to that. What about the person that has a longing for marriage and then he has to sit there and watch all this? Is he or she going to struggle with feelings? Very likely. Is it going to be difficult? Very possibly. There are some that, it's just some of those things. And I'm not sure where all of that erupted into becoming a public thing, but I think it's wonderful that a couple loves each other and that you can see that they care for each other. If there's a problem in the marriage where there's no love there and there's no appreciation, then don't be proud about the fact that you aren't petting and hugging in public, but you need to fix the problem. There's something that needs to change. You need to have some love for each other. But to put some of those things on public display, just it seems less than far less than ideal in my mind. Okay, let's go on and look at another subject, one more subject here, and on this one, I might be skating on thin ice, but I feel like somebody needs to sound the trumpet. Somebody needs to get our minds thinking and give us some thoughts. and help us think through some things. And that's on the matter of honeymoons. And don't turn your ears off right now. I'm going to talk about honeymoons. So, where does the idea come from? I'm not sure. But why would someone have a problem with honeymoons? Well, one of the things that I would like to consider is the expense. That's something that is worth considering. Most couples have just purchased a home to live in, and most likely it's not been totally paid for yet. And so there it is, all prepared for this couple to move into. And they still have some bills to pay, the thing's not totally paid for, and everything that they need to live life is there right after the wedding. Everything's right there. But for some reason, there's a need to go somewhere else and spend thousands of dollars to sleep in someone else's house. And I just wonder why. Why is that necessary? Where did we get the idea that it was necessary? And is it necessary? Number two, building memories. I believe in building memories, but what better place is there to start building your memories of married life and togetherness than in that little home that is yours? That little home that may be yours for many years, that might be where you live for a long time, and you've purchased it, and there it is, and after your wedding you go there and you start your life together in that home. I think that is a tremendous place to start building your first memories together, is in that home where you're going to live. That's where your first little child's going to be born. That's where life is going to continue on, right there in that home. And I think it would be a blessing to start building memories right there. And so, what if things don't go so well? Is there going to be this desire to maybe spend another bunch of money and go to live in someone else's house again for a while so that we can have a good time again? I'm just asking. I don't know. Is that something that's going to become a temptation? Every so often we're going to have to go live in someone else's house so that we can have an exciting day or week or month again, so that we can build some special moments again. But what's wrong with having special at home? These are just thoughts that I'm wanting you to think about. Thoughts that I'd like to throw out. Right here, at home. Not some distant, expensive cabin. I know of someone that loves to go traveling because her husband treats her like a queen when they go traveling. But when they're at home, things don't go very well. And both of them like traveling, but she's already said that's one of the reasons that she enjoys it so much, because her husband just dotes on her and just treats her like a queen when they're traveling, when they're going somewhere. And so traveling is special and important to them. But being at home is not special. And I'm not saying we shouldn't think traveling is special and important. Of course it can be. That's great. But God forbid that we should set ourselves up to think that expensive trips are necessary so that we can go somewhere and relax. We have to spend lots of money and go somewhere far away in order to relax and have a special time. I think there's something wrong with our thinking if that's how we think. Being at home should be relaxing and enjoyable, not just when we go away. It should be when we are at home too. All right, number three, peer pressure. I'm assuming that if you would decide not to go on a honeymoon, there would be lots of peer pressure that you would have to face. It could bring a lot of sideways comments and glances and things, but think it through. It might be okay. It might just be all right. And the last point here is time together. I just wanted to stress that. That, I think, is very important in getting married. There is a need for some time to be spent together, some time to get to know each other after the wedding. But I question whether it's really necessary to go to the far distant, expensive place to experience that. We can spend set aside time and be at home, take off of work, and I'm thinking you could probably take off of work quite a bit longer if you didn't spend that money to go to some exotic place. So I think it is very important to set aside time, spend time together, seek the Lord together, and learn to know each other. I think that's a wonderful thing, and very important, very necessary. But let's just think about how we could do that in a way that would maybe cause less financial strain. And maybe for some of you, it isn't a financial strain to go on a honeymoon that costs quite a bit of money. But those that follow you, are they going to be able to swing it as easily as you? Are they going to have to spend 2 extra years of their married life in financial difficulty because of the money that they spent following the pattern that you set for them? Just some things to think about. Let's consider these things. I think they're close to the heart of God. And again, I'm not trying to just paint a negative picture this morning. I want us to think together about wholesome, godly weddings. I want us to think about what is actually special and important about weddings and what makes them special. And let's embrace those things and go for them. Purity, hands-off courtship, all those things are wonderful things that we can bring to make a very special wedding. But some of those other things, let's give them some thought. Let's consider them. Let's be sober about them, remembering that we have an adversary that would like to cause us a lot of trouble. And another one of the things that I've noticed where some of the immodesty and the reserve breaking down goes on in weddings, for some reason, purity is not held up anymore either. I don't know why, but I've just observed that. All of a sudden, it's okay to be touching and holding hands and kissing a little bit before marriage. Why would that go with it? Well, I'm not quite sure. But it's just something for us to consider. All right, I hope I stirred your minds this morning. I hope it helps us to think together on some of these matters. God bless you.